Welcome to RNIB Digest, a new weekly roundup every Friday at this time, in which we catch up with the latest news concerning RNIB. I'm Ian Wilson. This is the UK's leading charity supporting those who are blind or partially sighted, and every Friday at this time we'll round up the latest news from it. So, coming up this week, RNIB explores new technology for contactless fundraising, which is set to be big in 2017. How your Christmas cards at this time of the year can lead to a funding boost for the charity. Betty Christmas, that's her real name, she's set for a Christmas with a difference. And how can you add your voice to the latest campaign to get more blind and partially sighted people into work? Let's start then with the recently launched government consultation on employment opportunities for people with a disability. RNIB's Jeff Fimister spoke to Alan Russell to explain what it's all about, what they've done so far, and how people can get involved.
Today we are looking at employment. It's a topic that we've looked at for many years now, and the difficulties that people with disabilities, including those with visual impairments, face when it comes to getting training, retraining, accessing the job market in general. All sorts of barriers there, but is there an opportunity now for the government to do something about this? Is there an opportunity for you, the public, to get involved? Jeff Fimister from RNIB joins us now. Jeff, you know, this is a topic we come round to quite a lot here on RNIB Connect Radio, but it is a huge topic and there are some real concerns about the falling figures of people with visual impairments getting into employment.
Yes, there certainly are, Alan. The figure for the non-disabled population in terms of people who are of working age or in employment is about 80%, and it's about half of that for disabled people. But if you look at people who are blind and partially sighted, it's right down at 26% and seems to be falling. So we're very concerned about that, and we're very pleased that it's going up the scale of public debate here, you know, and there's more news about it.
Now, if we're to look in terms of political intervention, there is a consultation of sorts underway.
There is indeed, yes. One of the current government's election pledges was to halve the gap between disabled and non-disabled people's employment rates by 2020. Now, it certainly doesn't look as if they're going to do that, but they have brought forward a green paper which creates a debate, and we think that there's an opportunity here to go some way towards closing that gap. So the Green Paper's been hanging around for a while. Every time we have a new Secretary of State, it's gone back to the drawing board. But finally, it's been published, and there is now an opportunity for people to make their views heard.
Now, there are many, many points to look at within this to help people with disabilities into employment. You know, it's not just sometimes as easy as going to the job centre, finding a card with a job on it and making the application. There's all sorts of things around training, even accessible information to find the jobs, to apply for them, and indeed the support that's there from Job Centre Plus as well.
Yes, that's right. What we want to see is a much more vigorous approach to providing decent employment services. So instead of just general advice, and you get something specifically geared to the particular disability that you have. So we want to see specialist employment services for people who are blind or partially sighted. That's one of the points we'll be making strongly, and I imagine that's something that your listeners would agree with. And there's also the question of employers' attitudes as well. Employers completely underestimate what blind and partially sighted people can do in the workplace. I mean, you know, 30 years ago, maybe, it was a huge obstacle to be visually impaired in the workplace. But now there's all this technology that can help you, and there's the Access to Work scheme that employers tend not to know about, and there's often disabled people don't know about. That should be much more publicised, much more upfront. So you know, a bit of determination is required here, and this green paper is an opportunity to push that.
We seem to come back to similar points each time we talk about this, Jeff, in that, as you say, access to work is there to pay for adaptions, assistive technology, it can pay for travel to work, a support worker. You know, it's there, but employers don't seem to know a great deal about it, and they seem to be diminishing as well. And those attitudes as well that employers have, that seems to be a real uphill struggle to change those.
Well, yes, you could call it an uphill struggle, but we need to start going up that hill, don't we? And while the government's saying, you know, they really want to address this, let's take them at their word and let's have a big boost to things like publicity for access to work, much better employment services, really tackle employers' attitudes. The Green Paper presents that opportunity to us.
We have with us Terry Ballum. Terry, you are registered blind yourself, so tell me about the difficulties you've had with finding employment.
Well, it's been quite difficult because I'm, you know, at the end of the day, I am 55, so age is an issue for me. But one of the biggest problems I've experienced is, one, I lack the experience that the employers want, and I don't have the qualifications. Interestingly, I think it's the lack of qualifications, and despite doing, you know, a significant amount of volunteering, I just don't seem to have, you know, the experience that they want. And quite often I feel I have got the mindset, which I've all been told in various job search courses is what employers look most for, but that in reality doesn't seem to be the case.
If we were to look at the qualifications then, I know you've looked at different courses to improve your skills. What kind of support did you get from, say, Job Centre Plus when you spoke to them?
I'm not particularly impressed with, you know, I've had contact with my DEA and kind of felt that I was telling them more about what was needed and how I could do it. So, you know, actually saying, going to them and saying, look, there's a job, you know, I'm interested in information, advice and guidance jobs and ECLO posts, etc. But I haven't got this qualification. I haven't got the money to pay for that course. How can I access funding? And that's led to a whole, you know, load of other questions.
OK, so the Disability Employment Advisor then would be your kind of first thought for things like that. So you've obviously recognised that you need to improve your qualifications. What was the difficulty? Because it sounds as if you've highlighted to them what you need for the particular post that you have to go for. So was it easy to get on courses, or has that been problematic as well?
Once I'd identified that, and he turned around and said to me, well, first of all, you need to demonstrate that the jobs, you know, are out there that apply for the, you know, particular courses. And I went, right, that's absolutely not a problem. And then he said, you need to demonstrate that you can do those jobs. You'll need to undergo, for example, a psychological assessment, which was quite, you know, quite a shock to me. He then referred me on to, you know, a training provider. And in fairness to them, they did try and get the course up, for example, the information advice guidance level 2, although I was looking for a level 3 qualification because that's what a lot of jobs require. But their difficulty was that then their provider didn't have the materials in an accessible format for me and just weren't interested in providing it.
So you've identified what the qualifications are. I have to say, though, Terry, I've never been asked or heard of having to do psychological tests just to get a job. So that must have been a bit of a shock right away. But to find the providers then don't have information for you to do the course in an accessible format, it must have been another hurdle. And I know you also looked at the European driving licence for computing as well. Was that any easier?
At the end of the day, I was so concerned about completing the IAG because I started, for example, the IAG in February of last year. We were so battling to get the IAG in accessible format, and at the end of the day, the provider did transcribe some of the materials. I didn't actually complete the ECDL.
So would you say you're kind of in limbo at the moment?
Well, yeah, I sent my materials off, for example, I completed the IAG course and I still haven't heard back. That's in respect of last September. So I've kind of almost pushed the ECDL to one side.
Have you gone back to your disability employment advisor since completing the work?
I have to admit, kind of to a point where you get a bit disillusioned and think, you know what, I might as well just do it myself.
Jeff, if you'd use the phrase one step forward, two steps back, it seems as if, is Terry's case typical?
Oh, yes, we hear that kind of story so often, and it's so annoying, isn't it, when you hear somebody who's obviously got so much to offer being messed around like that, offered a psychological assessment instead of accessible information, and she, you know, appears to know much more about the subject than her advisor. You know, that's the sort of thing that needs to be changed. You know, we need a big increasing quality. And that means the government's got to put resources into it. You know, obviously you can't blame the advisors, but the advisors have got to be trained up, and no doubt there needs to be more of them. So the government needs to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. We do need to see a big improvement there, don't we?
The advisor point that Terry made was probably one that stood out for me most there, Jeff, because I'm used to hearing about people not receiving things in accessible format and that taking time. But the fact that a disabled employment advisor is asking her, well, are there jobs out there that you want to do? And then saying to her, well, you know, we need to do this psychological assessment, almost not understanding, not all points of the job, but not understanding Terry and her needs. She's telling them what she needs.
Yeah, well, that's right. And what's needed is a personalised approach and some expertise.
One of the things I want to highlight as well to people who are listening to this, Terry, is to Jeff, that Terry, for most of her life, she was, you know, dealing with her sight loss. She was also bringing up a family as well, young children and so on, and was desperate to get back into work. Is doing all she can to get back into work, so not just sitting back on welfare benefits, and really just having such a difficult time.
Yes, that's right. It's the system really is not geared up to helping there. What we want to see is two things, and this comes up in the Green Paper as well. We want two things. We want, for those people who are able to work, they should get decent support, all the things we've just been talking about. For people, meanwhile, who can't get a job, they need an adequate benefit system to make sure they can pay the bills. And that's something else that, as we know, has been going wrong recently. From next April, people who are in the work-related activity group, employment support allowance for new claims, they're going to get £29 a week less than they do now. And that is such a bad idea. You know, if you get involved in work-related activity, your benefit is £29 a week less. It's actually £36 a week less than you get in the support group. That is a really unwise change, and we really hope the government will change their minds about that and make sure that people, while they can't get a job, are properly supported, and while they're looking for work, they have decent employment services to back them up. And again, we need to change those employers' attitudes as well.
Jeff, the consultation is on at the moment. What are you looking for members of the public, you know, disabled and non-disabled people, to do? Can they help?
The consultation paper itself is very large. It's 90-odd pages, and it's not an easy read, and there are pages and pages of questions. So we thought, wouldn't it be much better if we boil that down a bit? So we sat down and we came up with a much shorter list of questions. Our list is just over a page, so it's much more accessible. And what we would like people to do is make their own submissions to the consultation, say what you think about all the issues that we've just been talking about. Opportunities are there, the questions are there, and if you can let us know what you said, that would be terrific, because then we can quote it in our own submission, which we'll be working on. The consultation closes on the 17th of February. So I know Christmas and New Year get in the way, but that still leaves a reasonable amount of time. Now, if people have got access to the internet, go to the RNIB website, and there is a direct link as well. If you go to www.rnib.org.uk/workgreenpaper, and work green paper is all one word, then that will take you into a page that will enable you to make your own submission, and you can tick a box that it gives us permission to quote what you said. For people who don't have access to the internet, if you phone our campaign's hotline on 020-7391-2123, our very helpful people there will take you through it, and you do it over the phone. So if lots and lots of people can make those points, copy us in, that would be fantastic.
Jeff, we'll revisit this again, no doubt, in the near future. But for the moment, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Video.
Thank you very much.
Jeff Fimister from the RNIB talking there. And as Jeff explained, the consultation is open until the 17th of February. And RNIB says it's an amazing opportunity to improve the work prospects of blind and partially sighted people as we move forward into 2017 itself. More campaigns continuing all the time with RNIB, and later on in this hour we'll get updated on what's going on right now, including more details on this employment campaign. Now, for many years, the old Sooty Box was one of the primary ways of raising funds for RNIB. Hundreds of shops and stores all across the UK had one, and people were very generous with donating money. Well, in today's high-tech world, the sooty boxes, or at least some of them, are getting a little bit of a makeover. And here to explain more is RNIB's community fundraiser, Scott Jobson. Scott, thanks very much for talking with us here on RNIB Connect Radio. We're not actually seeing the end of the sooty boxes, are we?
No, Ian, we're not going to see the end of the 20,000 or so sooty boxes that we've got out and about across the UK. I think what we're going to see now is adding new technology alongside the old method of fundraising. That's what we're doing.
Okay, can you explain to us then just exactly how it works? What is this new scheme that you've been working on for a number of months now?
Yeah, so what we've got now is we've been working in partnership with Barclays, who have asked us for the next 2 months to trial 10 contactless donation boxes. And we've put them in a number of RNIB premises and a few public domains. So we've got two in Little Waitrose in London, and we've got one in O'Neill's on Euston Road, also in London.
OK, so it's a contactless payment system. How exactly does that work then, Scott?
OK, it works exactly the same as if you buy any item from a shop that accepts contactless payment. So you literally go up to the box, tap your card, and then it's a £1 donation, which is what we've got all of the boxes set at currently.
Right, OK, so it's a £1 donation, and it sounds a very easy process to actually give over your £1. What's been the thinking behind this to try and get this kind of scheme and this kind of high-tech scheme actually in place?
I think what we've seen in terms of trends over the last decade, really, is cash transactions declining slowly, mm-hmm. and other methods of payment, so contactless, credit card, cash cards, things like that, online spend increase. And indeed, it was last year was the first time that cash was overtaken by other means of payment. So I think that we've had to sort of diversify or at least stay ahead of this curve and look at different method of donations. And I think this is cutting edge, actually.
It's probably, Scott, as well, the kind of thing that people really don't think twice about doing these days, because the contactless method of payment has, as you say, really grown in popularity.
Yeah, I see it in pretty much every shop I go into now. And it's in fact, it's more strange when you go to a shop now when they don't have contactless payments, and it seems almost arduous to put your PIN in nowadays. So it's it is growing in popularity, and people don't think twice about it, and hopefully they won't think twice about it when tapping our contactless boxes.
How important is it for RNIB, who of course are constantly fundraising to get the money for the fantastic services they provide throughout the UK, how important is it for RNIB to go high tech like this?
I think so. I think if we don't innovate regularly, then we'll be left behind the curve. So we're always trying to think of the next sort of ice bucket challenge. And sometimes things work and sometimes things don't. So with this new technology and the contactless boxes, it is just a 2 month trial to see if we can iron out some little niggles and things like that. And if we want to then scale up and roll it out nationwide, if you like. So I think we do have to continually think about new methods of fundraising. It's very important.
And of course, it's the kind of thing you're hoping as well that the public is going to embrace. It makes it so much easier than the older method, as you say, of giving cash, because not everybody carries cash these days, or sending, as it used to be, a cheque or sending a postal order through the post. This is instant. It's over in a flash, and you can go away actually satisfied from one of the terminals, you know, feeling like you've done your bit to help charity.
That's right. I mean, it's such an easy method. And if people, for example, already have their card out because they've just bought a coffee or something like that, it's so easy. Or if we have an event where, like many people, I don't often carry much cash. So if I'm passing a collector in a Tesco store collection, for example, you know, I no longer have to pat my pockets and apologise. Sorry, I've got no change. I'd be able to just tap that box now and say, there you go. Thanks for doing a great job. So hopefully, you know, that will work for us also.
Yeah, hopefully, as you say, it will. Well, we wish you the very best of luck then with this latest stage of fundraising. You say that it's a 2 month trial and you're just in a few locations just now, mostly RNIB places, but one or two in London.
Yeah, that's right. So what I wanted to see is if we could really differentiate between which boxes were out in the public domain and which ones were in our services. So because it's a trial, I did want each box to be looked after by, if you like, a competent member of staff. However, I foresee that when they're out in the public domain, we'll increase that income tenfold by what we'll be able to see in R&IB establishments. I think they'll still be good in R&IB establishments. We do still get footfall, but not as much, for example, in a little Waitrose in King's Cross.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it is the generosity of the public that you're talking about as well. So the two-month trial is underway and we'll expect results in early 2017. And really, by this time next year, they could more or less become commonplace.
I think so. And I think because it's in its infancy, what we can then do after the evaluation is we can look at, well, what else needs to happen with these boxes? Do they need to have a beep to make them more accessible, which is something that we've already discussed with Barclays? Could we link it to something, a digital display? So, for example, when somebody taps a box, could they get an instant thank you? Do they get to see something visual that provides information about what they've just done? You know, that type of thing. So it really is, it's got a lot of potential, and it is, yeah, it's just in a trial at the minute, but still very exciting times.
Never has giving money sounded like so much fun. Scott Jobson, community fundraiser then for R&IB. Thank you very much for joining us here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Ian.
Scott Jobson explaining how new technology is being trialled to raise funds for R&IB through the one and only Sooty. Give it a try when you can. One swift moment and a donation to a very worthwhile charity has been made. You're listening to R&IB Digest, a roundup of news from the charity, each and every Friday at 6 p.m. here on the radio station of the R&IB. Now, as we rapidly approach Christmas, have you heard of the real-life Betty Christmas? Well, 87-year-old Betty, who lives in Birmingham, was recently introduced to a whole new world of technology after attending an online Today technology session run by R&IB. Despite having no previous experience of using accessible technology, Betty, who was diagnosed with age-related macular degeneration, AMD, when she was 70, has become a keen and proficient user of her iPad. Here's the one and only Betty Christmas herself.
My name is Betty Christmas. I am 87 years old. I have age-related macular degeneration. I had a session with RNIB online today. I now use my iPad for many things, such as taking photographs in my garden.
Tells me every time you know what to do, doesn't it?
Just because I'm registered blind, it doesn't mean I can't use the internet or the iPad. It's great to keep in touch. If you would like to know more about RNIB's online today support, visit rnib.org.uk/online today.
RNIB, supporting people with sight loss.
87-year-old Betty Christmas explaining how the R&IB has made such a difference to her life. Supported by the Big Lottery Fund, R&IB's Online Today project aims to help 125,000 people living with sensory loss to get online, enabling them to use the internet for everyday tasks such as shopping, banking, or just staying in touch with family and friends. To find out more information about the Online Today scheme, and a link to more videos of Betty Christmas, please visit www.rnib.org.uk/online-today. Time then for a full roundup of the latest campaigns news from the R&IB. We may be heading towards the festive season, but the work doesn't stop, as our own Alan Russell has been finding out.
It's time now for our monthly catch-up with the campaigns team at R&IB. There's all sorts of work going on throughout the year, and all aimed at making lives easier and better for people with visual impairments. Libby Rhodes joins us now. Libby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So it's time for our monthly update. So shall we start things off at Westminster then?
Yes, that sounds great. So as I'm sure lots of your listeners are aware, this month we held an event in Parliament. The reception was held to raise the issue of delayed appointments in eye departments with MPs. So delayed appointments mean that patients aren't being seen as regularly as they should be, and as a result, their sight is being put at risk. And the reception was really well attended, which is fantastic news. We had over 80 MPs, including the Minister for Disabled People, Penny Mordaunt, joining us to find out about the situation in their area and what they can do to ensure that nobody loses their sight unnecessarily. So I just wanted to say a huge thank you on behalf of everyone here at RNIB to everyone who invited their MPs to join us. We were really pleased with the turnout, and we definitely couldn't have done it without so many people inviting their MPs along. So very big thank you for that. So we now look forward to engaging with those MPs who attended by encouraging them to write to their local health commissioners to emphasise the importance of them addressing poor performance where they are having those high numbers of delayed appointments in the eye department, and we'll of course update you on progress in due course.
Fantastic. Some great people power there, getting their elected representatives to that event. We're staying on a kind of political front as well here, Libby. We're looking at employment.
Yes, that's right. So at the moment, the government is seeking views on how disabled people can be better supported into work and to stay in work. This is obviously especially important for blind or partially sighted people. There's only one in four blind or partially sighted people are in employment, whilst the employment rate amongst disabled people in general is one in two, and that of non-disabled people is four in five. So obviously it's really important for us to really get the message out to the government about how they can ensure that more blind and partially sighted people are in employment. So we're really pleased that the government is addressing this issue, and we'll be letting them know our views shortly. But we want as many people as possible to let the government know how they think that the government could help ensure that disabled people can be better supported into work and to stay in work once they do get into employment. So to help make that as simple a process as possible, we have created an online action that essentially enables people to respond to this consultation in as easy way as possible. So please do share your views and experiences on that by visiting our website. So the address there is rnib.org.uk/work-green-paper, or just give the team here a call on 0207 391 2123, and the consultation closes on the 17th of February. So we're really keen that we grab this opportunity with both hands.
Okay, we started looking at health, and we'll continue that for the moment, Libby. Looking at NICE, some clinical guidelines.
Yes, that's right. So we are really keen to hear from listeners with dry or wet age-related macular degeneration, as well as glaucoma and cataract. So we are really keen to hear about people's experiences so that together we can help shape the treatment that they receive from the NHS in England. So in 2017, NICE, so the decision makers, will be rewriting the guidelines that care services, so things like hospitals, use to treat those three conditions. It's really important for us that NICE know what's important to people when it comes to treating their condition. And this can be anything from the information people are given about their condition to maybe the time it takes to get your first appointment. So we're really keen to hear from people, so if they can get in touch with us so that together we can make sure the voices of people with those conditions are heard and care services provide the treatment that reflects the best needs of patients. So to take part in that, the address for that is rnib.org.uk/your-say-your-treatment, or do give us a call on 0207 391 2123, or feel free to drop us an email at campaigns@rnib.org.uk.
And Libby, people can use those contact details, the phone number and the campaign's email, if they want to get in touch, maybe if they have some issues they're interested in, or perhaps they'd even like to get involved in some volunteer campaigning themselves.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, these are obviously the top three issues that are going on for us at the moment, but that's by no means to say that we don't want to hear from people on any other issue that's affecting them across the country.
Fantastic. Well, Libby, it's been great chatting with you once again. Let's hope more people do get involved in campaigning. Congratulations once again on that parliamentary reception, and thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Alan Russell reporting. And once again, if you want to check out the latest campaign's news, then go to the website. Now, as we approach Christmas time, have you got your cards all sorted out yet and ready for posting, or maybe even some hand delivery? Well, if you're anything like me and you haven't even thought about it yet, here's how you can do it, and also at the same time, make a difference to RNIB. And this year, they've been selected by Waitrose to benefit from cards sold in their stores. With me to explain more about this partnership is Tina Varnes from Waitrose, the Corporate Responsibility Manager, and Harry Mead, Corporate Partnerships Manager for R&IB. So before we speak to Tina, Harry, I'll turn to you first. Christmas time is always a vital time for fundraising, isn't it?
Absolutely. Time when people who may be living with sight loss will feel more isolated and finding life quite tricky and difficult. So it is indeed one of those times of the year when our thoughts should turn justifiably to those that we're trying to support as part of our work all year round.
And partnerships like this are obviously vital for the charity as well, as we seek to expand and really sort of look towards getting the public generosity at Christmas.
Absolutely. We're hugely grateful to Waitrose for having selected R&IB this year as one of the charities to gain from this initiative, because it does make a big difference to those that we're here to support.
Let's bring in Tina Varnes then from Waitrose. And Tina, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Can I ask you, first of all, how does Waitrose decide which charities to support through their Christmas cards?
I meet with the buyer every year. We go through some of the initiatives and some of the charity partnerships we've been forging throughout the year. And R&IB was one. I'll give you an example. Our Waitrose editorial team regularly work with R&IB to produce content for our customers. So R&IB record onto a CD each month extracts from Waitrose Food Magazine and Waitrose Recipe Cards. The Waitrose CDs are then sent to visually impaired customers by R&IB on our behalf. And in addition to that, recently our e-commerce team have begun work with R&IB to investigate how we can make our website accessible for all. And this is a long-term project to help our customers who are partially sighted.
So obviously it's something that's very important to Waitrose to make sure that blind and partially sighted customers are being looked after, and that's really why there's already been a partnership, if you like, with R&IB.
That's absolutely right.
Do you find at this time, Tina, that we're talking there about Christmas time and how vital it is for charities and such like, do you find customers more than happy and willing to support, you know, various Christmas appeals that Waitrose are getting involved in?
Yes, I mean, we have a very good relationship with our customers, as you might know, through our Community Matters scheme. So the decision-making when we launched Community Matters in 2008 was very much devolving the decision-making process to local level, giving our customers and partners the responsibility to nominate local causes. And through the sort of democratic system through Community Matters, customers cast their final vote to share the portion in each of our stores every month.
Which sounds like a fantastic scheme. And I think it would be from Waitrose's point of view as well, Tina, it's so important to get customers involved and get feedback from customers as well so that they feel happy, continue to use the store and know that, you know, a certain amount of their finances are going towards supporting charities as well.
Absolutely. And, of course, we took that Community Matters concept online in December 2011, inviting national charities to bid to go on every 3 months, and there's a share of £25,000. So our online shoppers have the opportunity to vote for one of three national charities that are close to their heart.
Which is fantastic news to hear that R&IB then was one of them. Harry, that kind of statement that Tina just made there, I would imagine, is really music to your ears.
Well, absolutely. We're hugely grateful to Waitrose for that as well, because we were one of those lucky charities last September through December quarter and did phenomenally well as a result of that. So thank you, Tina, for that one as well. I would also add a couple of little points. I, being blind myself, regularly use my local Waitrose, find the staff hugely helpful when I need help finding products, and can also say that parts of the R&IB group have also benefited from the in-store Community Matters initiative on a local basis, which is absolutely fantastic.
And I'd imagine, as we said, Harry, it is such a vital time round about the Christmas period. Is this when it all really begins to ramp up for yourself? There's a lot of pressure, obviously, to raise funds.
It is indeed in a busy, busy time for us, and it's all hands to the pump to make sure that we do everything we can at this particular time of the year, which is why we are just so, so grateful to Waitrose for their support on this occasion.
Well, we are indeed. Tina Varnes from Waitrose, the Corporate Responsibility Manager, and Harry Mead from RNIB Corporate Partnerships Manager. Thank you both very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
And that's us finished for this week, but join us each and every Friday at 6 p.m. as we round up the weekly news from RNIB. It's RNIB Digest as we keep you up to date with what the leading charity for blind and partially sighted people is doing across a variety of fronts, including campaigning, fundraising, and making sure the voice of a blind or partially sighted person is heard. Join us next Friday for more of the same here on RNIB Connect Radio.